Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. You're going to try it. You have tried it. You're still trying it, but we're not going to allow you to silence the truth. Hang on a second. I got to get dapper here. Seriously, the censors are out. And speaking of that, Laura Loomer, really good showing in Florida. The left media panics. Interesting side note here. Laura Loomer is a good friend of the show. Hang on. I'll get it. Okay. Good friend of the show. She's a good friend of, a good friend of mine. And, she's a congressional candidate in the Republican congressional primary candidate in Florida. And you know, the left is panicking because they're saying, well, wait a minute, she can actually make it to Congress. You don't say. The big tech censorship of Republican congressional primary candidate Laura Loomer appears to have failed. You know, they tried to tip the scales against her, and now look. With new polling and financial numbers showing Laura Loomer with a very significant lead. Now, again, as a result of this, the media storm has once again started trying to discredit the Donald Trump favorite candidate, Laura Loomer. And you know what? If you've ever talked to Laura in person, she is a delight. And I spent some time with her in Washington twice, actually. And sorry while I get settled here. But twice. I think Eric the Tech, how you doing? Doing okay?
Doing good.
Caught him off guard. Gonna have to put a camera on you though. Yeah, were you with me when we met? You were there, right? When we talked to Laura? DC. I think you were.
Possibly. I can't remember.
Yeah, we talked to so many people, but Laura is someone who, in the times before Donald Trump, would have been marginalized as to the fringes of society. This, according to the left, you know. Laura Loomer is the, in my view, the female equivalent of President Donald Trump. She's 26 years old. About the age of my daughter. Wait, is that right, Eric the Tech? He's saying, oh, whatever you say. No, it's interesting to have her. In fact, I've got a picture of her and I standing in the Capitol together. She's just a delightful, delightful woman, young lady. And, there's an article. Where was this article? I'm not sure, but there was an article, about Laura Loomer. And, let's see here. The Trump 2020 campaign used her email list to reach potential donors. The Representative Jim Jordan, who served on the president's impeachment defense team, also used her email list for his 2020 campaign. And she's received an equally warm reception from Fox News host Jeannie Pirro, who endorsed her back in December. So, interestingly, but now, you know, the leftist knives are out again, and we're going to have a lunatic left update. Oh, you got to see this. Because you know why? We all need a laugh. But that's coming. Hang on. The leftist knives are out again. They're taking to the pages of left-wing outlets like the Daily Beast and Twitter to trash Laura Loomer. Linda Sarsour. Yeah, Linda Sarsour. You remember her, right? All right. It's the last time we'll mention her name again. She resumed her grudge against Laura Loomer this weekend after Laura exposed her multiple times. And you remember that she's previously worked at the James O'Keefe Project Veritas organization. So, but even some on the right are very uncomfortable with Laura Loomer. It's just not, you know, she's outraised the district's Democrat incumbent for 2 months straight. She's amassed nearly $400,000 in a war chest in that district. And she said, people are paying attention to my face from President Trump's retweet of a supporter who told me to, or told people to donate to my campaign, to our record setting fundraising dominance. That's right. This is going to be good. I do have a feeling that she is going to be victorious in this. All right. Things I've got coming up. I'm going to draw your attention here momentarily to our Twitter feed on the Hagman Report. A couple of important things there. I've got a Seth Rich Gateway Pundit update. And of course, you mentioned Seth Rich. Oh, there come the censors and, you know, watch out. Lawsuits fly. And after that, a General Flynn update, and then a little bit of depth with the Clinton Foundation, this going back to December of 2018. You might say, why? Why? Well, again, you know, did you ever play whack-a-mole? You know, the carnival games, whack-a-mole? Just in case, you know, Hillary the Mole pops her head up again from that ground holes, black holes. You remember the whack-a-mole? Sure you do. I don't have a mallet with me, and if I did, it would break the glass table. But, you know, the mole pops up, and you smack it, and it pops up over there, and you smack it over there. Well, that's what we're doing with Hillary Clinton. So we're going to have to do a Clinton Foundation in-depth report on this. Charles Ortel, of course, who I've interviewed on this program, has been on this program. He had an article at American Thinker earlier this week about the Clinton Foundation, linked to a video. Very interesting. I got to tell you, very interesting. And talking about the 501c and 501c3 issues. So that coming up. And then, of course, our number two is Stan Dale. Now, before I get fully moving, I want to ask you something, folks. Are you tired? Are you tired of paying high interest card credit rates? I know. Look, Christmas, that's long past, right? And I'm sure people have amassed a lot of debt through high interest credit card rates. Take a look at your credit card rates. Are they high? Well, I ask you this. How much money are you paying in interest, just in interest on your credit cards every month? Take a look. Do me a favor. Take a look. I know people who, close to me, who said, wow, I'm, you know, 22-23%. You got to be kidding me. It's too much. Then why not consolidate your credit cards into just one payment, lower fixed rate, and start saving money? It's easy with a credit card consolidation loan from LightStream. Rates are as low as 5.955% APR with AutoPay. It's lower than the national average rate on credit cards. You got to figure it's over 20%. You get a loan from $5 to $100,000 with absolutely no fees whatsoever. You can even get your money as soon as the same day. It's super easy. And, you know, LightStream believes that people with good credit deserve a better loan experience, and that's exactly what they deliver. I've gotten testimonials. Listen to one of the testimonials here. This is incredible. I heard about LightStream through a radio program advertisement, much like this. That's right. I'm so glad I had the courage to reach out and try their service. Top-notch customer support and service. Very streamlined process and no issues or regrets. Well, here's what my friends at LightStream have worked out with the Hagman Report just for my listeners. Apply now to get a special interest rate discount and save even more. The only way to get this discount is to go to LightStream.com/Hagman. That is, and I'll spell it out for you. You ready? LightStream.com/Hagman. Remember, two N's on Hagman. subject to credit approval. Rate includes 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. But visit lightstream.com/Hagman for more information. You're going to thank me later. Okay. Again, a leftist lunatic or lunatic leftist update coming up momentarily. One more thing before I get into that. Hagman Coffee. Oh, that's the back of it. Hagman Coffee, available in beans, ground, or even K-cups. Like that packaging? Eric the Tech did the packaging, or did the design for the packaging. Ammo box style, K-cups. Great packaging. This is 21st century packaging. Slick, huh? Sorry about that. HagmanStore.com. 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 Don't forget, significant proceeds go to organizations that actually help children and people from child trafficking, you know, investigate and save people from child and sex trafficking, child and human sex trafficking. Organizations, Russ Dizdar, Craig Sawyer, Russ Dizdar, Shadow of the Darkness, Craig Sawyer, Vets for Child Rescue. They do a great job. All right, folks. Go to Hagman Report Twitter right now. Hagman Report Twitter. Follow, or you know what? Just look at your screen. Follow along with me. You okay, Eric? Germ coughing over there?
Yeah.
Furball.
I'm okay. Just drink down the wrong tube.
Happens. Well, let me, cheers. I need the bean. All right. Let's go to Hagman Report Twitter. You got to see a couple of important things before we get into a lot more here. The first or the latest tweet, I don't know when it was. It was earlier this morning, I guess. Oh, that's a screen, or that you were able to capture that earlier. Okay. The fact that Roger Stone, did you see this? 9 years, potentially 9 years in prison. Meanwhile, and this is what I wrote. Meanwhile, as we await perp walks of the coup plotters and denizens of the deep state cabal, and the, or amid the chance of lock her up, you know, 9 years, facing 9 years in prison. There's indication, of course, that, President Trump will free Roger Stone. Now there's a graphic. I retweeted this from Sad and True. There's a graphic that Sad and True did post. And of course, that's the deep state, pictures of members of the deep state and kind of a roadmap to that. They put that back up. Put it back. Oh yeah. You're going to put the, okay. Okay, we can do that. There it is. There's a graphic. And you know, this is really, I think this is important. If you look at this, it's about keeping Trump's administration from uncovering the crimes of the most corrupt and treasonous administration in U.S. history. That, of course, is in reference to none other than Hussein Obama. Now, look, I know it's 2020, but think about this. In 2008, 7 years after 9/11, the enlightened ones of this country elected Hussein. What do you say to that? And there's actually four graphics here. And on the top left is are the pictures of the deep staters. There it is right there. This impeachment attempt isn't about uncovering Donald Trump's crimes. And as I read, it's about keeping his administration from uncovering the crimes of the previous administration. And don't forget Hillary, Diane Rodham Clinton, the mole. That's my new name. Forget the yak. The mole is in now. And the mole, we're going to be playing whack-a-mole again later today or later this hour. Whack-a-mole in depth about the Clinton Foundation. But there it is. There it is, really at the heart of it. And then the Iranian, if you go over to the right of that, the Iranian, ties to this country. Valerie Jarrett, born in Iran. Obama, or Hussein, sends secret cash by the pallet load to Iran. And of course, you've got on the bottom right, you've got Huma Abedin, her dad is from Iran, and you get it, right? And of course, the former Secretary of State Heinz negotiating with Iran. So there you go. And you can look at the graphics there. And I would urge you to spread that. That's on Twitter. All right. But the next one, this is the next one. You talk about infestation and infiltration. Now, this is from a Jew who attended this event at Rutgers. This was a discussion event, and he said he wrote everything was fine until Rashida Tlaib showed up. Now, what I'd like you to do is listen carefully, watch carefully what happened. Now, understand the backdrop of this. They were talking about bias. They're talking about a number of things, but if you don't mind, if you can play both the audio and video from that's embedded in that tweet, I'd really appreciate it. This is a Jewish man who stood up to confront Rashida Tlaib about her anti-Semitism. And it wasn't confrontational, certainly wasn't meant to be confrontational. He's saying, hey, what about your anti-Semitism? What about your blood libel? And the reception that he got was less than warm, to say the least. And the reason I'm showing this is because I truly believe that we are in a situation today where there is this renewed anti-Semitism, and it's, some of it is really, really subtle. You're going to look and say, well, okay. So we have to be careful when we talk about certain things, because many people will equate the deep state with this Mossad Jewish cabal. They'll equate, they'll make erroneous assumptions. You know, it's like saying, well, the entire government's deep state, the broad sweeping statements, they're not accurate. There are some great government workers. There's some great government, or great FBI agents. There's some great Secret Service, great CIA agents. And I would say we owe our freedoms to many, and we owe our safety to many. But there's that element of that deep state element that exists all across, within all factions of government. That's the deep state. So there's this anti-Semitic bigotry that's really growing in the United States. And we got to be really careful when we talk about this as we do the deep state itself, because we have to make sure we identify with precision those who are responsible for the coup attempt, those who are responsible for the deep state actions. But take a look at what happened to this man when he confronted Rashida Tlaib. Here it is. All right. Now, I find this chilling on a number of levels, because when you look at the crowd, you can see that the majority, at least in my assessment, the majority of the members of the crowd were Arab, of Arab descent. And did you notice how quickly? I mean, he just stood up and people were on him. Now, the police were on him. Did you notice how quickly that happened? And I would suggest to you that yarmulke he was wearing gave him, people were waiting for him to do something, say something, and man, they went after him, and you saw what happened. And then, of course, the majority of Arabic within the crowd chanting, you know, Rashida, and being very, very vocal against him. I thought that was pretty, pretty doggone chilling. All right. Now it's time for a leftist lunatic update. Now, if I had appropriate music to play with this, I would. Maybe some clown music. You know, There's two videos that you need to see. And why is this important? Because, you know, politics, okay, it's just theater, right? Well, one is worse than the other. The first one, I want you to see, pretty much for entertainment purposes. But understand this. The people elected this woman. Okay, this is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Lacking any type of substance within her cranial cavity, based on my assessment of her, giving a little words of wisdom. This is a compilation, I believe it's from the Daily Caller, that these trinkets of knowledge. I mean, I am so empowered and enriched by this. I know you will be too. I guarantee it. This is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. You got to see this to believe it. Here it is.
Ms. Hutchinson, I also want to thank you about bringing up the poverty draft and this idea of a bootstrap. You know, this idea and this metaphor of a bootstrap started off as a joke because it's a physical impossibility to lift yourself up by a bootstrap, by your shoelaces. It's physically impossible. We're here to talk about the very pressing issue of cutting our carbon emissions and saving our planet. And we have an entire political party that's trying to get out of their job, adjourn this hearing. And I just want to know what the reason for such a disrespect of our process would potentially be.
We expressed this last week about having two things going on at the same time. It's not like we haven't talked about this, but you guys continue to do hearings at the same time there are depositions going on. And as the gentleman from North Dakota said, we can't be two places at once. You talk about wanting to do your job. There's no way to do that when you have to be two places at once.
And just to be clear, there was exactly one Democrat in the room when this started.
Someone said, please explain the Green New Deal. Thank you for asking. So the whole premise of the Green New Deal is that we're screwed on climate. Like, I'm sorry to break it to you. If we do nothing, there is no hope.
Like, why are so many grown men just obsessed with this, like, 29-year-old? I mean, it's great. I love the...
Legal asylees are not charged with any crime.
When you're in the country illegally, it's violation 8 United States Code 1325.
Seeking asylum is legal.
If you want to seek asylum, you go through the port of entry. Do it the legal way. The Attorney General of the United States has made that clear.
Okay. When someone says that it's too hard to do a green space that grows yucca instead of,
yucca?
I don't know, cauliflower or something, what you're doing is that you're taking a colonial approach to environmentalism. And that is why a lot of communities of color get resistant to certain environmentalist movements.
Look, you've got some people seeing people here. Type in how much money in student loan debt you have. Someone says that they have $120,000 in student loan debt, and they pay about $620 a month. This other woman says, I'm an indigenous dollars in debt. Post your student loan debt. I'll read it out so we can all see how ridiculous this problem is and widespread it is. Because the thing about debt is that there's a culture around shame of debt.
This is what changing the country looks like.
Now listen to this.
It's when we choose to show up and occupy the room and talk about the things that matter most, talking about our future. You know, Reverend, you bring up a funny anecdote, and I'm proud to be a bartender. Ain't nothing wrong with that.
Yo, man, ain't nothing wrong with that. That one where Tom Homan from... Tom Homan went at her. Oh my goodness. I got to tell you, the second half of that where Tom Homan just went over. I mean, he raked her over the coals. I sat next to Tom Homan and I'll tell you, I was scared witless, man. Just sitting next to him in DC talking with him. I'd ask him a question. He'd look at me and there'd be like a, I don't know, like a small pause. I'm like, God, don't hit me, man. Don't hit me. He's a scary dude. Nicest guy ever. But you don't want to get him started on hey, you know, toss, let's let illegals. I'm going to tell you, he'll mop you up. Word, right? What? What are you laughing at? Oh, give me a cap where I can put it on sideways or whatever. Kind of like, remember Hillary changing her, Hillary going with the Southern accent. She's going with the black accent. I mean, these people are all the same. Leftist lunacy update. There you go. There you go. Because we all need to laugh once in a while. I've been having too great of a time with this. I really have lately. I've been accused of, you know, drinking the sauce. I've been accused of, you know, whatever. Must be the caffeine in the coffee, hypercaffeinated. Don't forget HagmanStore.com. That's right, coffee. I need the bean. All right. Again, that shows you the level of idiocy. And, you know, if I would have lived in her district and voted for her, again, I come back to my question to those people who voted for her. What's wrong with you? The more serious, much more serious, a little bit of information, a little bit of left lunacy is going to be on the other side. Stay right where you're at. The Hagman Report. You're listening to the Hagman Report. HagmanReportLive.com. HagmanReportLive.com. We'll be right back.
Mainstream media won't. You're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report on the Global Star Radio Network.
Back to Hagman. You're listening to the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. What do you mean, word your mama? Eric the Tech, word your mama. Huh. He's getting a little froggy. Eric the Tech, folks. I got to tell you, a lot of serious stuff coming up, really, the rest of the program. But again, you have to look at, I believe we have to start looking at things, for the lunacy. We have to really exploit their lunacy, the lunacy of the left. Now, it's a deadly serious issue, but there are times when you have to look at these people and say, again, what is wrong with you? I'll tell you something that's not wrong. It's the furniture in my family room. My family room couch, new. You know, it's time to get your furniture matched with your fearless style. Coach Dave Fearless Style. I mean, I'm talking about the fearless style of Coach Dave. That's right. Whether you're having a date night at your place or hosting, get this, Galentine's Day. That's a word I heard the other day. Your furniture should suit your needs, shouldn't it? But also feel uniquely you. And that's where Joybird comes in. Have you heard of this company, Joybird? I'm sure you have. My wife has. I have. I love it. They have endless customizable options. And that means days of settling, well, they're over. Joybird's Instagram gives you a daily dose of what's trending in customers' homes, whether it's mid-century, modern, whatever, weekly blog for tips and tricks. And you know what? Right now, if you're listening to this right now, be sure to hit up Joybird's President's Day sale where you can score some of those pieces you've had your eye on at a price you will absolutely love. It is on now through the 17th of February. So go to joybird.com/Hagman. You know, I've got to tell you, with Joybird, your personal one-of-a-kind style should match your furniture. And with Joybird, it can. You can bring your specific mood boards to life with hundreds of customizable pieces, over 50 fabric and leather options, 3 shades of wood, 250 unique silhouettes, and they've got rich buttery leathers, the softest velvets. I'm telling you, they got everything. It's quality handcrafted furniture. You get a 365-day home trial. You can skip the furniture store, bring the showroom home. You can sit on it, sleep on it, break it in. And if you don't love it, if you don't love your Joybird, you can return it. I don't know anyone who has. You know, Joybird stands by its quality and craftsmanship. And I'm all about style, but I'm all about quality as well. If it's not everything you've hoped for and dreamed of, send it back. Free returns within 2 weeks of delivery. Here's what my friends at Joybird worked out with the Hagman Report. You can create furniture that matches your own fearless style at joybird.com/Hagman. That's 2 N's on Hagman. And of course, Joybird, J-O-Y-B-I-R-D, joybird.com/Hagman. See how Joybird can help make your dream space a reality today at joybird.com/Hagman. Folks, go to joybird.com/Hagman and receive an exclusive offer for 25% off your first order by using the code simply Hagman, H-A-G-M-A-N-N. You will thank me later. I guarantee it. All right. Now, let me show you this. This is not something, look, we've got, you got the people trying to take the guns. These servile people trying to take away our Second Amendment rights. Oh, yesterday I posted, on HagmanReport.com. What can a handgun do against an army? I could be paraphrasing that title. I only looked at it 1,000 times, right? But read that article. I think it applies more today than ever before. Because people, you know, the leaders in quotation marks saying, well, your weapons won't be any good if, you know, you talk about calling a tyrannical government. Well, we've got nukes and we've got tanks and we've got bombs. What good are your handguns and rifles and shotguns going to do? What good are they against an army? Read that article at HagmanReport.com. Read it, pass it along to everyone you know. And I'm sure you've read it before. What good is a handgun against an army? The author of that, boy, I wish I could claim authorship of that. But man, is that a good article? I know you've seen it before. Read it again just to become reacquainted with it and familiar with it. But pass it along. I'm telling you. Seriously. And then show it. And not only that, send it to Governor Baby Killer. Send it to those people. All right. But along those lines, you know these people think you and I are stupid, right? You know Bloomberg, and watch Bloomberg now, because you know what he's doing? He's concentrating. He's getting a whole bunch of money and pouring it into the states with the highest delegate count right now. And he's got money to burn. I mean, hey, if I had his money, I'd give mine away. All $10 of it. Have you seen this? Have you seen this? Watch this.
If you think about it, we, the intelligentsia, people who could make it into this room, we believe in a lot of things in terms of equality and protecting individual rights that make no sense to the vast bulk of people. They're not opposed to you having some rights. But there's a fundamental disconnect between us believing the rights of the individual come first and the general belief around the world, I think it's fair to say, that the rights of society comes first. And so I don't know how many are familiar with the bathroom issue in the United States. Anybody know what I'm talking about? if you want to know is somebody a good salesman, give them the job of going to the Midwest and picking a town and selling to that town the concept that some man wearing a dress should be in the locker room with their daughter. If you can sell that, you can sell anything. I mean, they just look at you and they say, what on earth are you talking about? And you say, well, this person identifies his or her gender as different than what's on their birth certificate. And they say, what do you mean? You're either born this or you're born that. And, you know, I will say, in our prison system in New York City, we have to have the policy. When you walk in, you know, drop your trousers, you go this way, you go that way. That's it, because you can't sit there and you can't mix things in a jail. That's a practical case of where you have to make a decision. But it's so many things that we are nuanced and the social issues that we're very proud of achieving aren't believed by the vast bulk of the people. I got something important wrong. I got something important really wrong. I didn't understand that back then, the full impact that stocks were having on the black and Latino communities.
Family politics is so difficult. It is my pleasure to give these Made in New York awards to the Prides of Flushing in alphabetical order, Bob and Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah, now it's a party. Hey, Harvey, drop Shaw and fire a rocket, right?
Thank you, Mayor Bloomberg, and thank you, Mr. Oliver, for this tremendous accolade. I do want to say that about, we've had, you know, tremendous years, but about 4.5 years ago, there was a bump in the road. And I called our mayor, you know, and I just said, you know, things are a little topsy-turvy here at the company. You know, we could be moving jobs to California, and we don't want to leave New York City. And the mayor, you know, extremely busy as he was with so many more important things, dropped a lot of things and got it done for us. So
yeah,
the
sure
mayor's there in a big way, and the mayor's there in an individual way. And I don't think Bob and I would be on this stage if the mayor wasn't there for us. So thank you,
Mayor. Right. That's fine. That's good. The compliments are really called. You get the idea, right? This is the elite. These are the people who think that you are so stupid that, you heard them. We're smarter than you. We're part of the intelligentsia. And hey, you'd be a great salesman. If you can go out to the Midwest and convince people out there that you'd let, you know, Harvey Weinstein into the girls' bathroom at your high school because he identifies as a woman, we'll say, hypothetically, right? Nothing wrong with that, right? Paging Coach Dave. I can see Coach Dave, that vein, just... Again... Look, there's okay. You get the idea, right? Well, I'm going to be doing a lot of leftist lunatic or lunatic leftist updates. These people think they're better than us. They're not. These people think they're smarter than us. They're not. These people think that they're more refined and you know, cultured than we are. They're not. You know, look, I know Gilbert and Sullivan plays. I know, LaVey and Rose, you know, I know that. I know so don't call me not cultured, but I'll tell you what's wrong is, you know, you got a dangling participle and it's okay. Go ahead and go into the girls' locker room. No, that's wrong. And so, you know, the people in the Midwest like me, like Eric the Tech and like the normal people. No, that's not intelligentsia. That's just plain stupid. Ignorant. You're not more cultured. You're just perverted. That's all. But that's what they think of you. And see, here's my message to you. I believe that that's going to come back and bite them right in the, you know, chops, right? And if not, you know, just put Harvey Weinstein behind Bloomberg and let it happen. All right. Okay. It's all right. What? You okay? All right.
Sound good?
All right. I heard a chortle from over there. A chortle. I'm not sure. Speaking of words. Seth Rich. Guess what? Guess what, folks? The Gateway Pundit had this. This from today, Jim Hoft, again, a friend of the program. Deep State brings in big gun U.S. attorney to defy request. Now, listen to this headline carefully. To defy request for evidentiary hearing on previously hidden Peter Strzok and Lisa Page emails on Seth Rich. That's a mouthful, but there, read it. Okay, now let's do this together, okay? After getting caught lying to the courts and claiming there was no documents, or there were no documents related to Seth Rich, emails between FBI deep state lovers, Peter Strzok, that's right, Strzok, and Lisa, do it to me, Page, were uncovered with the title Seth Rich. Now, you've got, obviously, you know, you've got methods of data mining or querying databases. So Seth Rich, that being a search criteria. Oh, look at this. Seth Rich, bam, what comes up? The emails between Strzok and Page. All right, so why is this important? Well, see, next, the FBI claimed that the Strzok Page emails, while they were redacted to protect the investigation, they claimed never happened. I love it. See, this is why we can, listen to me, that we can rely on FOIAs. This is why. This is why when I say, you know what, stop the FOIAs in my case, you want to know why? There. That's why. But by God, if you do that, be prepared to be called a liar and get sued. Grab your ankles, you know, pull on your shoestrings and bootstraps, because you're going to... It's going to be Exhibit A. All right. But see, and this is why this really chaps my lips. Okay, so the FBI claimed that the Strzok Page emails were redacted to protect the investigation that they claim never happened. So FOIA this. Now the Deep State Department of Justice bringing in the U.S. attorney for the Eastern... you know what, Eric the Tech, I'm going to pay for that. I guarantee you I'm going to pay for that. He's rightfully remaining silent. He's saying, I don't want to get involved in this. All right, so now the Deep State Department of Justice is bringing in the U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of New York to argue against the evidentiary hearing on the matter. I ask you, is this the same Deep State that is going to make the arrests and perp walks? Is it the same one? Right? Is this the same Department of Justice? Under Sessions, trust the plan, Sessions. Is this the same Department of Justice? And Bill Barr, who, by the way, is carefully vetting the information from the Giuliani investigation, Ukraine investigation, because you know, we have to vet this information, especially if it's from the Ukraine, very carefully. Did you catch that? Those people up on the news, you'll know what I'm talking about. So now you've got the Department of Justice under President Trump. Hello. Bringing in the U.S. attorney to argue against an evidentiary hearing on the matter. Wait a second. I thought this whole thing was working swimmingly. I thought we were going okay. Oh, okay. Yeah. And the Gateway Pundit has the entire article there. You can read it. It's you'll cry, you'll laugh, you'll rend your garments, you'll go to drink, you know, You can read it. So, oh boy, let's see. I mentioned Seth Rich. That's a lawsuit there. I mentioned FOIA. That's a lawsuit there. Okay, just keeping track. I've got, you know, seriously, folks, I want to tell you this. Seriously, I actually have to keep, in when we do radio, especially, you know, syndicated radio, you got to keep a log pretty much. And I want to thank the log keepers, all of them, of what we say when we say it, because that way we can compare it to the transcripts we get. And, you know, Doug said this on this date at this time, and he was really out of line. And, yeah, that's right. So I got to keep a log. So hang on. I'll take care of this one. You can put your pen down. It's okay. Got it. All right. Okay. Also from the Gateway Pundit, listen to this or watch the, or yeah, no, listen to, wait a minute. Is this, yeah, this is my thing. This about General Flynn. This is the social media and General Flynn. You gotta take a look at this. You ready for this? Can we put that up there? That's right. Twitter punishes the wife of General Flynn. I don't even know what to say to this. Takes away all of the people she was following after she defends her husband in a tweet. Now, this is an updated. Can you make that full screen so I can see it? These old eyes are tired. Or wait. Yeah, see? There you go. Whoops. Okay. All right. I can't look behind me because, well, it's not there. It's kind of like the weather you see on television. It just doesn't exist. All right. So, okay, let me pull this up here. There it is. Okay. So you're seeing it on the screen. All right. The Obama deep state. Look, they spied on Lieutenant General Flynn since 2015. He was a target of the Obama deep state. Remember, now he's a Democrat and he was part of the Obama regime. And remember, one of the first things that Obama said, this is not in the article, but one of the first things Obama said to, President Trump was, don't keep Flynn. Oh, I'm warning you. Don't keep him. Yeah. Well, anyway, look, they wanted to ruin him, that they, meaning the deep state, and they're doing a good job of it. They are. Now, Sidney Powell is kicking butt, taking names and doing a whole, I mean, she's doing a great job. God bless her. And I love her book too, man. Anyway, but they wanted to punish Lieutenant General Michael Flynn because he did turn against Obama. And specifically about ISIS in Iraq. And you may remember this back in that time period. Well, what happened? You had Obama, Comey, McCabe, Strzok, Page, Brennan, Clapper, and the deep state, they set him up. And this is what they do. Take it from me. They will personally bankrupt you. They will ruin you. They will threaten your families. And I can hear people say, well, they don't threaten. No, 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 no. You want to bet? Just imagine this. Okay, so here's my thinking. They come to me and say, you know what? You can make all of this go away. And when you do, we'll make sure that we don't prosecute your daughter and son-in-law for, you know, being a co-conspirator in the peddling of fear porn, fake news, and selling survival DVDs, doomsday prepper gear, and being a Russian asset. We won't go after them. But you just have to sign on the dotted line there, admit to guilt, and we will leave them alone. Yeah, okay. That's kind of what happened to General Flynn, although different circumstances, different issues. So now what happens? So now Twitter is taking out their grievances on Mrs. Lieutenant General Flynn. And I think this really sucks. Because I'm going to tell you something. You come after my family. If you mistreat my wife, if you mistreat my daughter or son-in-law or whoever, or my grandchildren, And most importantly, if you mistreat my dog, I'm coming after you. So here's what was written by Mrs. Lieutenant General Michael Flynn. My husband is being treated like he's public enemy number one. All I did was help at Real Donald Trump become POTUS and did his job as incoming national security advisor. Our government that he protected for 33 years turned against him. Sad. Sidney Powell, of course, was tagged on this tweet as well. So because of that tweet, Twitter took away all of the 11,500 people she was following. Huh. Low life scumbuckets. By the way, they did restore, Twitter did restore Mrs. Flynn's list of people she was following after the story went viral. But you know what? Why? Well, we know why. But is this how the left wants to play? This is how these moronic leftist lunatic elite snob intelligentsias operate. All right. Real quick here. I guess I spent too much time in the lunacy department, but that's okay because this is something that we're going to have to dig in deeper. You know, one of the issues, and I think one of the places that the left is vulnerable on, and especially, like I said, with Hillary Clinton, and again, the whack-a-mole scenario, because she keeps popping her head up there, and we got to, bam, you know, we got to keep popping it down. Right, Madge? All right. If you go to American Thinker, there's an article there by Charles Ortel, a friend of the program. And he wrote, forget about impeachment. Here's a legal case that actually matters. And this is really a really important article, I think. And even though it's, you may say, well, this is kind of old news and somewhat dated. Well, perhaps. Perhaps it is. But if somebody robbed a bank 2 years ago, I don't know, got a bunch of money and was on the lam, and you were able to identify that person, would you say, well, that's kind of old news. It happened a couple of years ago. Let it go. Let it go. No, of course you wouldn't. I want to direct you to the video that's in there. And if you don't mind, Eric, play from, I think, 1410. Play that. And folks, these are two guys back in the 2018, late 2018, appeared before a congressional subcommittee and testified about the Clinton Foundation. So there's a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, a whole bunch of introductory stuff before this. And Tom Fitton was there. But these two guys, they operate this auditing company. And they look into 501c3s. And here's something that's really important for people to understand. I'm reaching for my notes for those people who can't. All right. This is something I thought was really interesting. Did you know right now there are 1.75 million nonprofit organizations in the United States? 90% are 501c entities. Two-thirds of the 501c3 public, two-thirds of that are 501c3 public entities. So 1.75 million nonprofit organizations under the 501c and 501c3 heading. Do you realize how much this represents? Think about this. Think about the 501c and 501c3 communities out there, the nonprofits out there across America. Take a guess before I give you the number. How much do you think that they represent in terms of economic, stuff. How's that for an economic term? 9% of the United States GDP, 9%, $1.74 trillion That's right. $1.74 trillion. 20 or, by the way, that happens to be, like a 250% increase over the last 20 years. When you look at 501c3s 20 years ago and today, it's, there are 250% more of them. But $1.74 trillion, which makes the 501c3 group the 10th largest economy in the world. Can you believe that? So the Clinton Foundation and all of its tentacles operating in all 50 states. It's important when I just said operating in all 50 states. Are they licensed to operate in all 50 states? Oh, I didn't know you could get licensed. That's a question. If you can play a little bit of this video from that hearing back in late 2018 at that starting point or about that starting point, that'd be great. Listen to this.
Of the donors, gave 80% of the money. So we followed the money.
We further went and looked at consent decrees that were issued against the foundation by various states. We reviewed the responses from all the states in which they operated to specific questions about violations, consent decrees, or penalties that they may have paid to those states. We did an analysis of that. The results are quite shocking.
In addition to that, we sourced contracts, MOUs, and interaction with foreign governments, including email exchanges between senior foundation executives and government officials. Additionally, we did a review of all their foreign offices, and we drew a spread map, a spreadsheet, comparing the Clinton Foundation with the Global Fund and PEPFAR. The results were stark.
Our conclusions in the interest of time are this. Foreign agent. The foundation began acting as an agent of foreign governments early in its life and has continued doing so throughout its existence. As such, the foundation should have registered under FARA. Ultimately, the foundation and its auditors acknowledged this fact and conceded in formal submissions that it did operate as an agent. Therefore, the foundation is not entitled to 501c3 tax exemption privileges as outlined in IRS 170c2.
Whoops.
Misrepresentations. The Clinton Foundation did not comply with the requirements of 501c3 and that it far exceeded the purposes detailed in its original Articles of Incorporation filed December 23, 1997 and subsequently reaffirmed in numerous other records across many jurisdictions, including with NARA. The Foundation did pursue programs and activities for which it had neither sought nor achieved permission to undertake. Such was the case even before the completion and transferral of the Presidential Library in 2004. As such, representation by the foundation to donors was a misrepresentation of the approval, organizational tax status allowing it to raise funds for the Presidential Library and related programs therein. In these pursuits, the foundation failed the organizational and operational tests 501c3 Internal Revenue Code 7.25.3.
Additionally, the intentional misuse of donated public funds. The foundation falsely attested that it received funds and used them for charitable purposes, which was in fact not the case. Rather, the foundation pursued an array of activities both domestically and abroad. Some may be deemed philanthropic, albeit unimproved, while others, much larger in scope, are properly characterized as profit-oriented and taxable undertakings of private enterprise, again failing the operational tests for philanthropy referenced above. The investigation clearly demonstrates that the foundation was not a charitable organization per se, but in point of fact was a closely held family partnership.
Oh boy.
As such, it was governed in a fashion in which it sought in large measure to advance the personal interests of its principals as detailed within the financial analysis of this submission and further confirmed within the supporting documentation and evidence section. Our last finding, donors' responsibilities. The private foundations that donated to the Clinton Foundation are themselves subject to tax payments on the donations that they made to the foundation under code IRC 4945.
Okay, if you can cut that right
unless
there.
They meet specific conditions.
I just want to address this. What he's saying there, and this is really an important part of this, If you donated to the Clinton Foundation, and hey, they were a 501c3, right? And you donated to them, and then you wrote, and then on your taxes, you properly, in your mind, okay, I deduct my donation because that's a 501c3, so let me deduct the $1.7 million I paid them, or $10, or whatever it might be. You can be penalized by the IRS. Did you hear what I just said? I know you're not. Huh? Okay. So, this is an important point because you have people donating to the Clinton Foundation, and because they're in violation of the 501C and 501C3 statutes, you donate to them and write it off on your taxes? Oh, no. Because you can get fined yourself by the IRS. Think about that. In addition to everything else you know, that should... Hey, folks on the left. Hey, Hollywood people who donated to Clinton's 501c3. Did you know that? You could be in trouble with the IRS. Yeah, well, the question is, will they be? You can read Charles Ortel's article at American Thinker. We're going to have him back on the show. And by the way, I did reach out to Dr. Paul Cottrell to come on the show. I'm waiting on a response, and among other people as well. So, and I would also ask everyone listening, if you do have a blog, talk show, website, whatever, please spread Dave Dobmeier's initiative out. In fact, you can even point people to this program yesterday, or his, more importantly, his Fox News appearance. I think that would be most appropriate. But get him on your show and talk about him and spread him around social media and watch your social media accounts just go boom. And somebody came in during the video that I was playing and said, what was that about? Why were you saying, what would you have that article up there about what your handgun can do against an army? What your pistol can do against an army? And, that was in response to Biden saying that your AK-47s, now this is a true statement that he made, are no match for the government's F-15s with Hellfire missiles. Not quite accurate there. And also, nobody needs a 10-round magazine. And I agree with that. You don't need a 10-round magazine. If it's capable, you need a 30-round magazine. If not, one of the, you need at least a 30-round magazine, in my opinion. That's right. You don't need a 10-round magazine. 30 or nothing. Right? Okay. And if it's Tuesday, it's Tuesdays with Stan. Let's have, hey, pull up a chair. Have a cup of Hagman coffee. I need the beans. Stan Dale from standale.com. That's standale.com. By the way, he's got a great Patreon channel. Do support Stan Dale and Holly Dale by way of their Patreon. That's standale.com. And from there, you can get on their Patreon. Stan, how you doing?
Very good. Yesterday was my 75th birthday, and Holly and I went out and had a nice Mexican meal and enjoyed some movies and just kind of, slacked off. It was nice.
Well, happy birthday. I didn't know that. I feel bad.
Yeah. You do?
Why? I feel bad that I didn't wish you a happy birthday yesterday or get you anything.
Well, heck, I don't always, neither one of us put it out there, that kind of stuff. It's just what it is, another day in the calendar, but, apparently being 75 is a milestone or something like that. So,
well, there yeah. You are. Look at that.
It was nice to sit down and just have no phones ringing, nobody from Google listing trying to get us to pay money or something like that. We must get 10 of those calls a day. Just drives you mad.
Yeah. You don't want to know what I'd do with those people, but I get so sick of that.
Well, after we got back and relaxed a bit, and I was laying on the couch there, and I was having to think about things about my life, how many people had come, passed the paths across my life, and how many blessings there were that they had been to me, and some still are. And it was kind of weird because I thought, well, let's see, oh, such and such helped me out on, getting a job and, military. There were guys there that were friends and did things. And I started going through my mind all the people that I had been helped by. You know, I stood on their shoulders, in essence, by what they did for me. And I was still going at an hour and 15 minutes. And I realized, you know, we don't really think about all the other people in our lives that have contributed to what we are today. And it's just, I think it's a good thing to do every now and then, because it kind of brings you back down to earth, and you are thankful for the community and people who've worked with you and been your friends and helped you. Just a little minor thing there, but it did happen. It was good to do that.
You know, in commemoration of your 75th birthday, and in the spirit of that, I look at the Hagman Report, and I've got to tell you, Stan, you, for sure, you are one individual who has elevated this platform and been with us to allow us to grow to what it is today. And, you know, whereas you were saying that about yourself in the other position, I look at it the same way you did, or saying, you know, my goodness, Stan Dale, what you've contributed over the years to the Hagman Report, no one else could have done it, and I thank you for that. And I wish you a very happy birthday and many more, because not just because of that, but you're a nice guy. You and Holly are great people. So,
well, thank you for that. Thank you very much. Well, yeah.
Cheers, brother.
Cheers. I was thinking, you know, we all probably share a number of evangelists and their outreaches, you know, that have helped us to be where we are today and to understand Scripture. And that was another thing I was very thankful for. It was like, you know, obviously your program and your witness and your guest witnesses over the years, and Hagee and Hal Lindsey, Perry Stone, and Chuck Missler. Sorry, who else? Jack Van Impe. And I think, you know, all these guys have done extensive studies, and they share it with us in manners that we can understand and put together and try to understand the time we live in. And I'm very thankful for all those guys. They do what most of us probably don't have time to do, is to dig into the Word in great detail and, you know, translate things. And they've been a great inspiration to me. And so I think we could all be thankful for these people helping us.
Amen. There's so many good people. And you know, that's, I see that. I don't know. Maybe it's, hey, you know what, Stan? Maybe it's because we're, I don't want to say our age, but our experience, you know, we realize that, we didn't do this on our own, all on our own. You know, we had people that brought us to the dance and helped us dance, and, you know, appreciate it.
Okay. I was down in Australia when I went on the run down there from, you know, the various government agencies in Russia, the United States, Great Britain. They were looking for me. And I was out there in the bush, you know, with a couple of friends that were helping me hide. And I did tell the story the other day on your show about the Jesuit priest guy that caught me. He was supposed to wipe me out and didn't. And, you know, of course, you kind of go, whew, that was close. And there have been a couple of other times that were, you know, not directly in my face, but things were being done to cause me grief, and they were circumvented, not by my hand, but by the good Lord. And you just have to realize that you are where you are, and you've been saved a lot of misery by the good Lord if you're a believer over the years. You don't see these things, perhaps, or behind the scenes, but, it humbles a person to think about that.
That's right. It does. And that, by the way, was an amazing story about your being on the run. Folks, if you haven't heard it, I can't remember when we talked about it, but an amazing story. Oh.
Yeah. When I got out of the desert there was, in fact, That was interesting because that was, I think, a couple nights before that is when I kind of realized that I might be dying sooner than I wanted to. And I instead of just kind of being a go to the church on Sunday or, you know, holidays or whatever, I pulled out the Bible there that had been given to me by a lady, an old lady over in Adelaide. We went through there a few weeks before. And I started reading in the book of Revelation and things, and I read some things in there that she pointed out to me. I realized I was part of bringing these things, you know, to the people's attention because I'd been involved in it. So anyway, I sat there and made my commitment, you know, and said, Lord, you know, I want to be on your team. And made my joining the team speech there to him and went to bed. And once we started to get out of the desert, we had to go further west into West Australia. You come out of this desert and suddenly you hit, you know, bitumen road and stuff instead of sand and things. And there was this little town there. And even as we were approaching the night before, small miracles happened. An axle breaks on an old trailer we got carrying food and gasoline. And at 11 o'clock to midnight, you wouldn't find anybody in a small town with a garage open to help you. And we didn't know how far we were from, you know, help. And I was laying off the side of the road there. My trailer was slid off, and, you know, we were three of us. There were two in the other car and me, and the other car went on and didn't realize I'd dropped off the road. And, you know, they realized I wasn't there after a while and came back and saw what had happened, and they drove up around the hill and showed me that here was a guy with a gas station working on his race car, and so he could give us a tow up the hill. So that was a blessing. We get up the top of the hill, and he repairs our broken axle there, and he says, you know, that's kind of a rare beast of you, you know. I just happen to have one sitting out in the backyard. There's another miracle, you know. And then we asked him, well, look, how much do we owe you? And he says, oh, he took a look at us and, you know, realized that we weren't well healed. He said, how about, you know, $12? And, you know, I nearly fell on the floor there, but I thanked him and said, yeah, sure, great. So we drove during the night after that, and sun up, we were in this little town on the border there. It was Sunday, Sunday morning, and we were pretty hungry at that time, didn't want to stop and cook a meal or anything like that. We had a little milk bar there, which is a miniature 7-Eleven, a mom-and-pop shop where they do their own baking, and they buy it and stuff and put it on the shelf. It's kind of like a small 7-Eleven. Anyway, so I go in there, and I smell this fresh bread loaf. I see it sitting there next to the cash register. A big block of cheese, you know, and I thought, boy, am I hungry. And I'm looking for someone attending the shop, and there's no one there, and I call out, no one answers. Maybe if I just leave some coins on the thing and just, you know, take it and go. I'm thinking this, and this lady suddenly appears through the doorway there to the back, and she's got her apron on. She's been baking again or something. She dusts off her hands. She can't help you. I said, yeah, how much for, you know, say half a loaf of that bread and some of that cheese there, you know? And she says, well, how about free? I'll give you the whole loaf and all the cheese. And I said, what? Why are you doing that? She says, well, the Lord told me to do that. And I said, really? She says, yep. And so she wrapped it all up and I went out. All three of us had a really great breakfast and actually lunch after that. Another miracle. And it just goes after that and after that and after that. So many things have happened over the years. And I was thinking about all this the other day, or yesterday, as I was telling you. And I just marveled at all these things you kind of forget, you know, but they were really neat. So.
Wow.
Anyway, yeah, enough on that. Enough on that. Things with the coronavirus are kind of ramping up. We have sources of information that I can't make public for their benefit. And, yeah, we have contacts in China that have been to our home and stuff, right? And one of the things that we've gleaned from this over the last 3 or 4 days is that the report of 1,000 dead by the Chinese or something from the coronavirus, that's stupid. It's not true at all. And if you look at slide 48, that's a snap of one of the things that we got. It was just in Chinese and then translated. And, you know, where there, if you see the red circle things, there's one that says 24,589 in the middle. That's the actual death count at that day.
Right.
and there's some other factors about how many are infected, 154,000, blah, blah, blah. Over the weekend, I got an update, and the death count is actually over 240,000 now. They've been burning them just lickety-split in the ovens there to get rid of the bodies. So when they do this, you got to know that this is serious and not just saving face. This is trying to keep out of lawsuits and all kinds of things. So I talked to my son over in West Australia last night, and he's in the mining industry and, you know, big projects that deal with China, and they buy stuff, and China also sends product to Australian companies. And he said they've had a slowdown come because China is not making any more product. They're putting all their assembly lines and stuff on shutdown for a while till they can control the virus. So it's hurting the economy of, you know, West Australia there and the mining industry there. And of course, no one is buying stuff at the moment. It's all just gone to quiet because of this, you know, the coronavirus. It really is going to be a long reaching and kind of a real hurt to the population of the planet. So,
you know, I agree. And I was doing some research myself on this, and everybody is lying. It's really simple. China is lying. The governments, plural, are lying. The media is lying. Everyone's lying. And I found that even among those who recover from this, there is a concern because there has been noted this permanent bronchial or permanent lung damage, permanent scarring, fibrotic scarring of lung tissue among those who recover from this. And the virus itself has got that HIV homology, which makes it more virulent. It's not AIDS or HIV, folks. It's the HIV homology. And, it messes with the different types of proteins and such. And I'm not a biologist. I don't know how to explain this, but man, it's bad. And you're right about the numbers, Stan. I'm hearing too, from a friend who's got somebody who actually talks, you know, to him on the phone, in China, and, mobile crematoriums.
Well, yeah, I can't, well, like we've talked to real people there that are very, like, you know, related. So anyway, to protect these, people, they're risking their neck, to use the phone or internet or even mail, snail mail, to get information out. But, you know, rational beings looking at, you know, stats and how things are affecting businesses and whatever will figure out that it's a lot worse than they're telling.
How does this play out? The economy aside, the economic damages aside, which there will be and are many, and it's going to continue to reverberate, I believe. But for us here in the West, specifically in the United States, what does this, how's this going to affect us? First, in terms of our health, obviously, and second, in terms of everything else.
Well, obviously, if it gets really bad, you know, kind of like in China, it will cause panic. It'll cause panic buying. It'll cause people shutting down businesses. It'll be an economic hit that is just incredible. It'll hit the stock market and things like that. Holly and I were talking about this, I guess, late last night and early this morning. When the spread of that disease does hit the United States, if it does, and gets, you know, really bad, people will not be able to, say, take postage packages and parcels from overseas or even within the country, but especially overseas, and with, you know, without having sanitation gloves and spraying it with the, you know, Clorox spray or perhaps with other types of disinfectants that kill bacteria and viruses. And so I said to her, you know, we get a lot of mail here and, you know, letters and stuff that have been handled by people and from overseas. And good grief, this stuff lasts, you know, at least 9 days, maybe longer, on various substances, this virus does. So it's going to make people very frightened. Wearing the gas or the clean mask, you know, to try to protect yourself is pretty much useless, unless you've got a family member and stuff that you're trying to reduce the amount that you're getting. So this is going to affect shopping trends. Can you imagine, like at Walmart, you know, or Target, or some of these places where people shop, and Safeway? You go in there, you're going to need more than those little sandy wipes for your handles on your buggy there that carries all your food, and just everything, money, everything you touch in the process of commerce is going to be suspect and need to be sprayed or cleaned. So this is going to make people reluctant to go buy. People that are aware of these things and the possibility of them now are already starting to buy up things. As you know, the N95 masks of various descriptions have all been sold out to the public now.
Yeah.
Ahead of time. And, you know, that's okay, but it does tell you that the fear is there. The advanced preparation is there. And it means you're going to want to stay home and not go out and do much. But if you got a job, you got to go out and do your job. So you can see why China's shutting down businesses and stuff over there, or assembly lines and things, because they don't want people moving around doing normal things and changing, you know, the path or the vector of the virus. So, but how will it affect us? Well, psychologically, financially, and health-wise. And as you said just a few minutes ago, the damage to the lung tissue is going to be worse than COPD. It's not going away. It's scar.
That's right.
And so, no, I didn't say that. Hang up. I didn't do it. Oh, sorry.
No, those are birthday wishes from the NSA.
Oh, good, yeah. Good, yes.
But yeah. Okay, so let me ask you this. If you received a packet, let's say, I don't know, let's say this mug you order from China, and it was shipped to you, you know, and you got it in the mail, and it was in a box, and it was wrapped up in a box. Would you leave it in the garage for 2 weeks, or would you, what would you do? What would you do with the box, and how would you handle a shipment from China?
Well, depending upon how urgent the product was that I ordered from China, yeah, you could spray it on the outside, but you've got to get inside of it as well. So my thought would be to spray it with the disinfectants, with the Lysol or the Clorox on the outside, all over the sides and your hands as well. You know, even certain types of rubber gloves can be penetrated by the stuff, so you really just need to sanitize everything. And I would leave it there and for maybe a few hours, then go open it very carefully, cutting things away. Open it outside, you know, so that you could put it straight into the trash, ideally into the burn barrel, but you're not going to do that with every parcel you get. And then inside you would spray whatever's in there and let it sit for, you know, a couple of hours as well. But all these things are kind of ways to reduce your exposure or, you know, your probability of being exposed. But none of these are going to be foolproof because there are just so many ways that the stuff can be spread. And if you look at like UPS and FedEx, the boxes are laid on a floor in the truck, and they come into your house or your office, and they're very dusty anyway.
That's
but yeah. They've been mixed with parcels from all over the world.
Very true.
And, you know, so whenever you get like mail at the post office or mail in your mailbox or deliveries like that, all these things need to be considered dangerous. Once it starts to get bad, and of course it is bad overseas, so is it coming here in the mail?
Wow. Mail order virus.
Yeah. Well. Yeah.
Is this going to, excuse me, I don't think it's a fair question. I was going to ask you if this, if you think that this is a, you know, the plague level situation, or, you know, the culling of the population.
Well, I don't know. This particular virus and the outbreak may be contained. Certainly in this country, President Trump has done everything he could to nip it in the bud. but it's very hard to block all accesses that the virus could have to get here through normal package shipments and things that would carry the germ. We may get through this, and then a bigger one will come. It's like over in Northeast Africa, you know, Somalia, Tanzania, Sudan, you know, all these countries over there are having troubles with an emerging locust plague. I mean, a big one that's just wiping crops. And, of course, they live hand-to-mouth over there. They grow corn and stuff like that, but it's a very close touch with the earth to eat, survive. And it's moving over into, you know, the Middle East and over to the Philippines, this locust-type spread. So these are happening without a mechanism to get them across the ocean. What is that causing it is darn near like a judgment in the Book of Revelation. Is this going to be the one, or is it going to be a series of like famine-producing plagues? I don't know, but I would treat each of them that we see as potentially as dangerous as we see in the Revelation of John, personally anyway. That's why Holly's written the book and other people have written books and talked about it. Get prepared, you know, for your medicines, your food, your water, and so you can just pull in the hole after you and stay in your house, you know, quarantine yourself when it gets bad like that. But
your name and Holly's name came up several times during our Patreon meeting last Sunday night, which was delayed a week because of the Super Bowl, people, like, you know, families coming in and stuff. So we just rescheduled it. But many people said, you know, dare to prepare. That's the ultimate guide for times such as these. And I believe that. And I want to thank Holly for writing that book. And for offering the information for free at Dare to Prepare, you know. So thank you. Because, yeah, we need this. You know, Stan, I just have a bad feeling about all this. I really do.
I do too. Yeah. If this isn't the major events, I don't think it is. It's certainly the precursor, the lead up to the judgments at the last half of the tribulation. And there are probably going to be some in the beginning of the tribulation, which will make people cry out for a world government. I mean, even the Pope, that clown, he's back at it again about this one world order. He's just fulfilling prophecy. So we are close. I mean, darn close.
I mean, how many people, you know, Stan, I was thinking about that. We saw the resignation of the Pope, you know, several years ago. And then we see this Pope, this Marxist Pope, in pushing the one world religious, you know, all roads lead to heaven. We see the volcanoes, earthquakes, you know, them ramping up. Then we see the virus.
Locust plague.
Locust. Thank you. The locust. Yeah. Now I joked around, you know, grabbing look. But you know what? This is serious. I mean, guys like you and me, I mean, I've seen a lot. You've seen more than I have. I mean, of course, you're a hell of a lot older than I am, so.
Yes, my boy. Yes.
It just makes me. I'm looking at this. I'm thinking. I was looking at your show images page earlier, and folks, go to standale.com. Seriously, what a wealth of information! Holly does a great job keeping the headlines up, and of course, everything in the show images page as well. But I gotta tell you,
man.
Yeah, go ahead.
No,
I was just gonna say that. I'm looking at everything that you have. Everything that you've mapped out. And I remember a year ago, you talking about various situations that we're seeing today, especially the earth changes. I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm waxing nostalgic, I suppose, but,
There's a number of people in the Christian community that have been trying to prepare people and helping in various ways. Yeah. While I was researching something in the Bible the other day, I came across my notes that I talked on your show about several months back about the rapture business and then also about Babylon. And if America is the modern Babylon, it certainly fits a lot of the criteria. But if America is that, and the Bible says, come out of her, my people, that you be not partakers of her sins or her judgments. So what does that mean? Is everybody supposed to move out of the United States, get out of the hospitals, and, you know, get their crutches and hobble on out of town. What does it mean? And I don't think that that's what it meant, because when you look at the Greek and translate that verb, come out of her, it's a command, come up out of her. And that, to me, sounds like the rapture, that before Babylon is destroyed, that the Lord's people will be pulled up out of it. So I think that rapture thing is going to happen, and that will be, you know, fulfilling that part of it where it's a command. Anyway, that's just a side issue in it. But
well, yeah, and I know how people like to get into it about the rapture, folks. You know, what? It's I don't want to say it this way, but I don't care. All right?
Yeah.
I don't personally. I don't care. I'm here. God. You know, whatever happens, I'm cool with it, man. You know. So.
Yeah.
So.
Well, God's going to look after His people, right? And we're adopted into the Jewish family. He's going to look after us as though we were the Jewish family. We're you know, part of the family. Huh. And if He says that, you know, to come out of it, that's different than saying, translating it to come out, because people just are not going to be able to just run out of the United States if that, you know, fills the bill as Babylon of this age. It's just impossible. So I don't think he would be unfair to his people, and there would be some way for them to be delivered from the judgment on Babylon. So people that have been packing their bags and going to New Zealand or Indonesia and hiding in South America, you know, I don't think that's probably necessary, really. Trust the Lord.
Trust the Lord. That's right.
Yeah.
If I can pose a question for you in anticipation of tonight's appearance tonight on the Hagman Report. I got an email from, maybe you know her. She lives in Colorado. My goodness. a fine woman in Colorado, who listens to you every Tuesday on the Hagman Report. And also on, I can't find it. Anyway, her question was this. And if you want to entertain it, fine. And if not, we can do it some other time. But given all the headlines of today, the coronavirus being a big one, the locust, the earth changes. And then she references the quickening. If you are doing a show with Art Bell, and you've done many, so the question she has is, what would your conversation, do you think, would be like with Art Bell? Of course, you know, never mind me, but Art Bell, which God knows, what an interesting guy Art Bell was. God rest.
He was definitely one of a kind. You know, the late night show hosts, you know, like Nuri and stuff like that, they're good, but they just don't have what he had. That was a magic in his voice and his thoughts. Interesting fellow, and if he were alive and we did a show now, he would probably be very animated and pulling in a number of other sources into the conversation on his phone lines, and perhaps running several nights with it, because it's that important. Now, did he believe as a Christian? You know, was he born again? I don't know, but definitely he would have found it a very important topic to discuss, because he talks about the quickening, which is fulfilling prophecy. So who knows?
Yeah, I can almost hear his voice, you know, from the high desert. And, I can almost hear him talking about the advancement of the virus, coronavirus, and having you there talking about all the earth changes and the, he'd be excited about the electromagnetic EMP defense shield. I know he would. Sure he would. Yeah, he'd be excited about that. But, it was just a question from a listener who was, musing about what that conversation would be like. So.
Well, yeah, I know when, you know, Holly and I listen to Cusco every now and then, and we'll get on one of the tracks, you know, that he used to use as his opening, you know, his bumper music. Mm-hmm. And, hearing that, remembering back in the old days, you hear that coming on the radio, you think, Art Bell, you know, and stop everything. It's time.
Yep.
It was informative and entertaining, and some of it a bit silly, but it was fun.
Yeah, it was indeed. And he I know that he thought a lot of you and had you. I mean, it was just, it was magic back then. But
there was a time when he was they were going to set me up and train me to be the Art Bell on the other side of the world in Australia, because our clocks are like 15 hours apart, so I could do nighttime there during the day, and I could pick it up here as well. But I could run the stuff. I'd get Australian, you know, guests and things like that. But it never panned out because various other things took precedence over in the corporate world. But the stuff that he had to go through, and I would have had to gone through with legal department, what you can say, what you can't do, and what happens if this person is suicidal, and you know, all that kind of stuff. It's just, you just think you just get on and talk, but there's a lot of other things you got to be trained for.
That's true, and a lot of people don't think about that. You know, a guy that flew into, reportedly, allegedly flew into Area 51, and
yeah, yeah, he was going down with the ship. You know, yeah,
they're shooting at me, Art.
As I said, he was entertaining at times. Entertaining.
Oh, yeah. And Mills Hole. And, I mean, oh, my goodness. Yeah, yeah. It's just, so, well, thank you, Lori, for, actually, there's two ladies that, thank you, Lori from Colorado. Do you know any Lori from Colorado? Nah, never mind.
No. No, I can't admit to that, no.
Yeah.
No. Hey, on the Earth Changes Things here, in slide 43 on our Show Images page, it's not a huge or a very long video. It's a news clip. It's called Utah was the site of a huge volcanic eruption a long time ago, about 30 million years ago, the way they take it. And this thing was 30 times the size of the biggest Yellowstone explosion ever happened. Now, it's not like it's going to go again or anything like that, but it's an interesting look at the lava flows that they've now discovered, that this was really big. So Utah, Montana, Colorado, Nevada, all this area in here, was very stressed, you know, geologically from all these plate tectonic movements and asteroid impacts. And this was one that they don't think is going to be active again. But there you go. That's the one.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, okay.
I see it. They're scanning it there on your screen. But yep. they're the geologists out there with the discovery they made. Just another one of those things you were mentioning that are on the increase of discovery of it tells us that there was a time when Earth was younger that we were just absolutely clobbered. And we're now starting to see a number of increased meteorites and things that are coming off the tails of comets that have passed us years ago. And I think that we're probably due for another round, maybe not as big as these things that we're looking at here, you know, meteor impacts, it would be like a volcano, but they're going to be big. And obviously the one in the book of Revelation talking about the one that kills, you know, boils the sea when it hits it and kills fish life and whatever, it's star called Wormwood falling into the earth and the oceans. That's going to be a big one, and it will hurt. Just one of the many things that the Bible talks about. Slide 44, let me just go over there. This was an interesting article over in Israel. The Sanhedrin, you know, the Orthodox legal body for Israel, for the Jews.
Right.
About 5 years ago, they planted a bunch of olive trees. Now, these olive trees are kept apart and kosher, you know, for use in, temple worship and getting olive oil. You can see a picture of it there. There you go. These olive trees are necessary for temple worship. So they're ready to harvest now this year. First time in 5 years they're getting it ready. And it's part of when they, you know, the temple sacrifice renews, as we know it's going to happen from prophecy. So seeing this in the news, I thought, wow, we're getting closer and closer. And I'm not sure whether they've actually decided they've got a red heifer that's, you know, perfectly unblemished with no single white hair on it, but we must be close. You know, they keep coming each year until they get it. And that red preserved in a kosher place, in a kosher manner, to start, you know, temple worship again. It tells us, like Art was saying, you know, it's the quickening. Things are coming together so rapidly here. All the things that are necessary. And this peace treaty stuff, you know, in the Middle East. There are quite a few Arab nations that are liking what the Trump doctrine, you know, that peace treaty is saying. Right. I've said from the start that what he offered, and what Jared Kushner put together with him, and Netanyahu, what they put together was not the be-all, end-all, sign it or else. It was, here's a plan that may work. What do you think? And getting feedback from the various nations involved in this. And, you know, Jordan's being a bit of a sticky thing, but there, and the Palestinians. These things are negotiation points, and I think that we're going to see it be fulfilled. Sadly, I think that it will still have Israel divided here and there, but it will annex some more property if it goes the way it is now. But it is close. It is very close to that peace treaty that we've been warned about in Daniel there. So, yeah.
Okay, but they would. There's a confirmation, not a new peace treaty, but a confirmation of an existing peace treaty, or one that's kind of in floating around in cyberspace, so to speak, or in space in the ether.
No, this is a newly drawn one. It's not the one that Nimrod Novik and Paris did back in 1995 or 6, but there were elements from that will go into this. And I think continuing the pattern that was in that first draft in the late 90s, they will probably put a 7-year, let's try it and see clause in the peace treaty to see if it works. Let's all agree to it for 7 years and see how it goes. And the fact that they put that in there just, you know, makes my alarm bells go off. 7 years, 7-year tribulation, you know.
Yeah, why not 5 years? Why seven?
I know, you know. I know. Well, these were Orthodox Jews that were putting that peace treaty together back then at the Oslo Accords. So, yeah, I'm not surprised, because sevens and 13s and threes, they all have, you know, specific, you know, kind of esoteric meanings, but 7 years is what they put in it, and I wouldn't be surprised to see it in this contract as well. Now, Washington is putting the heat on to get the major Arab nations in the Middle East, the Saudis, Israel, Egypt, UAE, Bahrain, Oman, Sudan, all these together in March, and it's to iron out the details that need to be changed or agreed to, you know, the concessions in this peace treaty. So they are definitely serious. They want this to happen, and they're trying to do it before they have to have another election in Israel. Again, very, very close, very busy.
Yeah, that's for sure. Now, if I can ask you about the olive trees, going back to that, what do they use them for?
The olives? Oh, they press it to get the oil. It's an oil for anointing in the temple.
Okay, that's okay. Simple as that. Okay, I didn't know if there was something else going on. Okay.
Well, Holly and I have bought olive tree ourselves over there to, you know, it grows for us over there in a plantation, and we've given each of the children an olive tree to help grow the olives there. So, get involved.
For their birthdays, I planted a tree in Israel for you. I bet you they were excited to get that from you, Stan. Oh, what did you
get? Yeah, thanks, Stan. Yeah. But anyway, it's in their name, so.
No, it actually would be very exciting, so that's good. Okay.
Yeah, you can watch it grow occasionally. They give us pictures of the plantation there where they're planting new stuff every year.
Yeah,
now, while I was doing all this and looking at, you know, oil and, you know, olive oil and these things like that, I remembered a book that I read, most of it anyway. It was from 1880, and it's you know, Colonel Charles Wilson, a Brit that was over in the Middle East, documenting the various things in the Old Testament, finding the places and talking to the locals, you know, the Bedouins and stuff, to get the details of various things. And one of the things that he put in this was, I think it was about a 4 or 5 volume set. It's big. But one of the things was that he found what the manna might have been, that, you know, that they ate, you know, every day, that when they woke up, the dew had formed, and there was this manna laying on the dew-covered land or grass or whatever was there next to them. And the instruction by God to Israel in the time that they were in the Exodus, of course, was, okay, 5 days a week, you go out and you gather just enough of this manna that's on the ground that appeared overnight for your family for one day's consumption, because you don't want to keep it long because it goes off. It's a biological material. And so Wilson looked in and talked to the natives, and they found there was that particular bush even today that an insect lands on, this particular insect on it's called the Haloxin salicornicum, the long name for the manna bush anyway. But it forms this kind of bud you can see there in slide, where was I, in slide
45.
45, yeah. And then you go over to the article and read about that and look at the photos there, a lot more photos on it. And this insect would cause the plant to secrete a type of sap. It would foam up a bit and then fall on the ground and, you know, form something that you can eat. Interestingly, even though God told them you don't want to keep it, you know, longer than a day, on Friday they were together a double portion from what fell on the ground, because there was more than enough for people, but together a double portion for your family, because Sabbath starting that evening and going through the next day till sundown, you didn't want to go out and do work gathering, you know, manna. So it managed to stay good for the Sabbath for them as well. So seeing that, and seeing the actual bush that does this still, it's all over the Arabian and the Sinai Peninsula there, all over that. It tells you that God used what we call natural events or natural, you know, processes to supply the miracles for Israel and for them and against their enemies. There was, in this book, I tell you, it's a fascinating read. They got hand-drawn pictures of the various rocks and like over at Petra, he's got that in there, part of his discussion. These older books are just so well done before, you know, digital things. He talks about in the Bible where Moses tells the leaders of Israel, the various tribes, he says, look, we're out here in the desert and we're hungry. We need to eat. I'm going to catch us some birds. You know, the Lord told me how to do it. And they would put nets up across, close to the ground in various canyons early in the morning to catch this particular type of bird. They would fly out and into the nets and be caught, and they would have, you know, bird for probably several days after that for everybody to eat. Again, a miracle, but God had taught Moses how to, you know, how to get the water, for instance, for them by striking a rock that had been storing it up, you know, in the hillside there. You can still do that today. There are certain rocks that have just clogged up. They were sandstone, but there was a huge watershed up above them underground. And if you break the cap off of it down at the, you know, wherever you're standing, lower down, it will cause water to drain out of the sandstone and down into a pool there. The one for Israel was huge, though. I mean, that's a million livestock and people to have water. But we think that the area has been discovered on the western slopes there in southwest Saudi Arabia, up into Jordan, actually, part of it goes. But all these things I looked at, and I just wanted to share with people. Let me just see. Can you? I photocopied this because I couldn't get the original yet. Picturesque Palestine, and let's see here. Yeah, and there's line drawings like that. It's bad in photocopy. Wow. But maps, all the desert things and adventures that Israel had are covered in this. And it's Colonel Charles Wilson. But it's, you know, one day maybe I'll be able to find an old copy of that somewhere.
Colonel Charles Wilson. But, yeah, it's not available, obviously not in print.
No, not currently. Don't think so. Yeah, you know, I think they did a printing, you know, a bound edition in the early 1900s. But mainly over in London where they were doing it, being a Brit doing all this. But his observations were just so encouraging, because people kind of say, oh, miracles, yeah, poof, you know. But Moses spent, what, nearly 40 years himself before he went to rescue the house of Israel and bring them back into the land. And he was, you know, shepherding the sheep for his father-in-law out there, and he was seeing all these events. And the Lord was teaching him how to use all these things when the time came. But when the time came, the things that he used to protect Israel in the Exodus and to feed them and that kind of stuff, they were bigger than what Moses had been trained in. These were really big. Stored up just for that moment, just for that time. And that went on for 40 years while they were wandering in the desert there in the southwest Saudi Arabia, maybe down as far as Yemen. I don't know if they got that far, but 40 years. So anyway, just to me, to see the flower, to hear about the birds, they still do that today. And water, you know, you could strike a stone, a sandstone, and get water out of it in certain places there. It just makes the Bible so much more real to see these things. And not fiction, not fable, not myth, you know, real.
You know, that makes me kind of think of the people who write in forums and type comments from a position of ignorance, saying, you know, the Bible is just it's a fairy tale book. And I wonder how many of those people, I'm not putting them down, but I wonder how many of those people have bothered to dig into the research like this and understand what you just said. Because, man, I would think, you know, if I was knocking something like the Bible and I saw something like this, it would cause me to do a double take.
Yeah. Me. Yeah. Yeah. Well, even though I was a believer, it made me pay attention and say, wow, you know, that's how it happened. It's like finding the Garden of Eden. When I found that, I'm doing my Patreon channel. I'm editing my trip over there to the Garden of Eden. I'm on part three now. I've released two parts that we took there. But when I stood up on at about 10,000 foot altitude on top of the Nguru Plateau and looked down about 400 feet down underneath there to where the water pools even today and comes up from an underground spring to the west of there from the Land of Eden, I like the hair on the back of our neck, everyone was there that were believers. You just suddenly thought, wow, I'm here where the water came up to water the garden down below us here. I'm really here. And it was just such an awesome moment. We just stood there and took it all in. And as I'm editing the film, I'm remembering these things that happened. And sitting here in an easy chair and seeing that, it's a lot more comfortable than the hardship to get to it. But, real.
And I'm sure it had a very specific, I don't know, feel to its smell, feeling, like I said, even the colors, the hues, you know, it's a very special place.
It was, it is. And I guess the window of opportunity to visit may be closing or getting smaller anyway, because the terrorists, the Islamic terrorists, are all around Tanzania trying to get in. They're smuggling guns in and things like that. And the Christian prime minister is doing his best to protect the country. But he's just on all sides. He's surrounded by guys that want to come in that are wanting to get rid of the Christians. So there's going to be conflict there eventually. I suppose that's why they gave us an armed ranger or two to go with us when we went up there. But when we went up there, there was just Maasai and their cattle and their donkeys. And, you know, we howdied and shook and whatever. And very peaceful place. But they tell us that that water where it comes up for make the four rivers of Eden, that place is like a special place. It is the life-giving place for the tribes around there, for the villages, for the water for them and for their livestock. And you'll see in some of the video, well, members of my Patreon channel will see, there are ruts that are maybe a foot to maybe 16, 17 inches deep on average that are about the width of a donkey's path. And they're carved into the hillsides and down into the valleys, getting up to that top where the water is, because they go every day, sometimes several times a day, to put water in 20-gallon things and put them on the backs of their donkeys and bring them back down to their villages. It's the life-giving water there. Just little things that strike you when you're standing there and involved in it that just astound.
I want to thank you for releasing what you have. Folks, my wife and I are members of Stan and Holly Dale's Patreon, and the work product that's put out, it's well worth the commitment, the support, I'm telling you. And there it is right there. You can select a membership level, of course, and that's Stan and Holly's Patreon page. And the link is there. I'll make sure I put a link to it in the description box. But it's very well worth it. And I would urge everyone to become a patron of Stan and Holly Dale.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that. You know, one of these days we're going to have to figure out how to wake up the rest of the people, you know, in the world that aren't believers yet. I guess they have to be ready. But I would have thought that there had been a lot more people that said, wow, that's real. There's a real Garden of Eden, and been excited about it. Actually, the Tanzanian Tourism Department have contacted me and want to use some of the stuff I've produced to advertise, you know, this is the Garden of Eden. The Tanzanian government.
That's amazing. It's good amazing. But you know, you mentioned something there. When are people going to wake up? And what I don't care for, Stan, is the people who, and maybe I'm just a lunatic, I don't know. People will say, well, you know what? Garden of Eden is not there. No, it's not there. It's over here. And really, I mean, to see your investigative work product, your research product, I got to tell you, and I've looked at others, and people have sent me all kinds of stuff, but yours has all sides. I mean, yours is a multi-leveled confirmation, at least what I can see out of it, of the location of the Garden of Eden. And I'm just saying, I would stack yours up against anyone else's, you know?
Yeah, well, look, I've looked at others too, and even before I released, my discovery, and none of them did what I had done, and going to the detail, the depth of proving every clue in the Bible, here it is, it fits, you know.
It's right.
It's just so solid. I mean, there's just no question about it.
Yeah, I love the level of detail that you go into, and even, some of the facts serve to, and maybe this was not the intent, but certainly serve to push away or answer, I don't know, counteract the other theories. I like yours. Yeah. I do.
Well, I didn't come out to disprove all the other theories,
right.
But
I mean, it happened.
Sorry?
It happened, though. I mean, you can't have the Garden of Eden where you say it is, and you know, over in the Newark, New Jersey, where somebody else says it is. Okay? I mean, it's just not possible. So,
yeah.
But by offering your research, I think it shows pretty convincingly that you are correct, at least from what I've seen.
Well, look, I use the Bible as a basis. If it doesn't fit the biblical narrative, then I don't accept it. So,
and that's a big, you know, this whole thing is a big deal. We are seeing an increase in knowledge and a confirmation of what happened 2,000 years ago. And further back, we're seeing all these confirmations. And then combine those confirmations and that new level of knowledge with the current events. Man, I'll get it. Hello.
Thanks.
Yeah, I tell you what, bells are going off in my head too.
Yeah.
But, no, it's just, it's really a good thing, Stan. It really is. And I appreciate your work and Holly's work. And man, I'll tell you what, these Tuesdays just fly by. They really
do, don't they?
Yeah.
But it's good. It's good. It's we're sharing like at a fireside chat, and
that's right.
All those people out there listening, and they do email us with information too. We're very pleased to get that.
Well, my man, I tell you what, I wish you the best day after your 75th birthday. Mm. And I really appreciate what you do, and appreciate you, and appreciate Holly, your website, standeo.com, her preparation book there to prepare. Thank you for all you do, and your book, Cosmic Conspiracy, as well.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
You have a good night.
Bless you now.
All right.
You too.
Folks, all right. That'll do it for me. Stan Dale, you know what? Wish him a happy birthday. Send him an email tonight. Say, you know, happy birthday, Stan. It's the day after. But let's extend the celebration, right? We can do it. I'm telling you. We're lucky to have him. You know that, right? Just reminiscing about the days with Art Bell and stuff. What great times, huh? From the high desert. Folks, I want to thank you for joining me. By the way, remember I told you, you know, the electrical system here in the studio, that's kind of mitigated. Well, it's cleaned up. Eric's hair is back to normal. However, the end of the week, we're going to have some contractors in to fix the issue. I'll let you know about the shows on Thursday and Friday tomorrow. And until tomorrow, God bless.